Foreign policy has dominated the headlines over the past year plus, including NAFTA, from North Korea to Iran to Russia to China and beyond. And my next guest has a somewhat pessimistic view of where the U.S. stands right now. Richard Haass is president of the Council on Foreign Relations. His latest book is called A World in Disarray, American Foreign Policy and the Crisis of the Old Order. And Dr. Haass, let me first ask you if you see any other time in history that's analogous to now in terms of the kind of disarray you see around the globe.
There's nothing that's exact, in part because of things like globalization, which is just qualitatively different, the velocity and the volume of everything you can think of crossing borders. But you know, this is also a time where great power rivalry is relatively muted compared, say, to the last century. But what worries me is we're moving into a period which could become more reminiscent either of the period before World War I or even the period going back several hundred years ago when you had all sorts of entities, many of whom were in states. And what worries me about the future is I can imagine terrorist organizations and criminal cells, drug gangs, pirates, and so forth. And we have a world which begins to fracture among many many fault lines. And that's a kind of messiness or disarray that is not far-fetched.
Is it more concerning to you that some of those non-state actors you mentioned, you know, like a pirate group or a terrorist organization, is perhaps more involved in what's going on in the world than just state versus state?
It does, because it's very hard to deter them. In some cases, it's hard to stop them. It's one of the features of this era of history is, you know, you get on the internet and or you get into the world of Bitcoin and suddenly you can get resources. You can inspire people, you can recruit people, you can find weaponry, you can even get a hold conceivably of some really, you know, terrible forms of destructive material. So yeah, what worries me about this era is you don't have to be a state or a country to be meaningfully powerful.
You talk about nationalism in your book, and I'm wondering, in general, what role has that played in everything that you're seeing going on, both here in the U.S., but also globally?
I think we're seeing a revival of it, to some extent, an anti-immigration fervor. We're seeing it also anti-trade. We're seeing elements of it, less interest in foreign policy, more focus on domestic issues. It's kind of merged in some ways with populism. And I think what's unfortunate is it's scapegoating immigrants and trade for other things, and particularly the reason a lot of jobs are disappearing has nothing to do with immigrants or trade. It has everything to do with new technologies and productivity changes. And I think it's leading people also to neglect what's going on in the world. And the risk is obviously if things go to hell in a handbasket in the world, we're not going to be able to insulate ourselves from the effects.
There has been, as you well know, a lot spoken and a lot written about the current administration in the U.S. and its approach to foreign policy, how it's considerably different in many ways than previous administrations. I'm wondering if you think that that is a response maybe to the way things have been, or if that is maybe a cause of the way that things are.
I think it's much more of a cause. There was no reason that this administration, how would I put it, had to be the way it's chosen to be. Fair enough, they came in with a daunting inbox, everything from North Korea to Iran to Russia to China to Venezuela. I mean, this is a tough situation they inherited. But their response has been to make it a lot more difficult. There was no reason the United States had to walk out of literally a half dozen or more international agreements. No reason the president has to be tweeting all the time the way he is. There's no reason that suddenly the United States had to become unreliable or unpredictable. These are all choices of this president and this administration. And again, the net result is to make the difficult situation they inherited far, far more difficult.
Do you buy into the narrative that by the U.S., for example, walking away from some of those agreements or taking some of the actions it's taken has led to or given opportunity for other countries, be it China, be it Russia, be it somebody else, to take more of an active role and have more influence in world affairs?
Short answer is absolutely. I think what we're doing is creating a world in which others are saying, hey, this United States is no longer prepared to do certain things. In some cases, we may like what we see. We may see some other countries take on greater responsibilities. But I think in the lion's share of the cases, we're going to find other countries doing things that are going to give us heartburn.
Do you think that foreign policy is something that can be done by playing catch-up, either by this administration or a future one, where if we see something like that happening, we can try to reassert ourselves on the world stage?
Well, I think that's going to be the choice or the situation facing Mr. Trump's successor. I think he is unlikely to change. But at some point, he won't be president. There'll be a 46th president of the United States, but he or she will inherit a far more demanding world, in part because of what this administration helps set in motion, and the prestige and standing of the United States will be considerably diminished. I don't think we can quite put Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you about the role of technology. You kind of alluded to the fact that, you know, technology allows countries to do things that in the past they weren't able to do. How significant do you think some of these technological developments are in the way that foreign policy is conducted, both here and around the world?
In terms of existing technologies, for example, the whole digital revolution. Suddenly you have instant communications, but you've got all these capabilities in cyberspace, and the world hasn't begun to figure out what should be allowed, what should be discouraged or forbidden, how do you police it. So there we're in a terrible situation of catch-up. We're still trying to cope with the spread of nuclear or biological capabilities. And I think in the future, one of the real questions is going to be, it's not one people think of as foreign policy, but it's going to be artificial intelligence, robotics, driverless vehicles. Millions and millions of people are going to be thrown out of their existing jobs. And the challenge is going to be, how do we retool them? How do we prepare them for the jobs to come? And if we don't succeed at that, there won't simply be an economic price to pay, but I think there'll be a real social price to pay.
All right. Richard Haass is president of the Council on Foreign Relations. His book is called A World in Disarray, American Foreign Policy and the Crisis of the Old Order. Dr. Haass, thanks a lot for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Mark. Be well.